sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Jobs report falls short. Global markets fall, and a shakeup in OPEC. Our guest today, Kevin Hoffman from Horowitz & Company, right here. We're going to be talking about, well, portfolios, strategies, diversification, and investing for the long haul. All this and much more on episode number 462 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me so much here on a beautiful, beautiful week here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I got to tell you, I spent some time on the boat and I checked out. This is unbelievable. If anybody had the chance to do this, the Air and Sea Show by boat. There's about from north to south along the beach of Fort Lauderdale, there's about a 2 mile long, about 2 mile long area of no boats. You can't go there, and about a mile wide. So it's a big rectangular area that has no boats in it, and then all around it, there are boats watching the Air and Sea Show, and particularly, you know, the F-18 fighters, the Harriers, the various, prop planes that are doing their crazy tricks and kind of their death falls and spirals and flat spins and just amazing, amazing look at these planes. These things are loud. I mean, some of these planes, when they go by, they're just unbelievable. You see the four or five in a position, and one breaks away. They go straight up into the sky, directly up, does a kind of a free fall, and then just takes off. And the boom, the movement of these things is pretty scary. I was thinking about, man, if I had any of these kinds of combat airplanes on my tail at any given time, I mean, just can't even imagine what it would feel like. Or even being in the cockpit of one of these things, it's pretty amazing. I actually also went real quickly. There was a wonderful event. There's a couple of them. And next year, we're going to actually take a sailor fishing. When it comes to town, the aircraft carriers and there's some battleships and a few other things that come into the area. And you can actually take sailors fishing with you a few days before the event. So next year, we're going to sign up to do that. But I also went to an event that was really cool that was called Galley Wars. And it was a friend of mine put this on, actually. It was a charitable event. At his place of business, and the various staff from the galleys of maybe about five different ships. It was the USS Cole, the Bataan, a few other ones were there. They came in to do kind of a cook-off and then had judges and all that. It was very cool. Tons of sailors were there. I met actually the brand new, the XO and second down from the assistant XO, I guess it was, of command for the Bataan. Spent some time with him. Really nice fellow. And just understood more about the supply management and all that. It was very, very cool. So I encourage you to, of course, support our sailors and all of our military. And just my hats off to everybody that participated in that great event over at Allied Kitchen and Supply, and my friend Bill, who put on a great event. Anyway, let's talk about some of the things that are going on, and we're going to get to a discussion with Kevin Hoffman, because I think there's a lot to really go over there in terms of, this whole thing we talked about some time ago about, all right, how do you create these asset allocation strategies, and what do we do here at Horowitz Company? Also, what is the way that you can provide for yourself a long-term strategy utilizing things like mutual funds, ETFs, sector rotation, asset allocation, diversification? How do you choose a mutual fund? Why do you choose a mutual fund? Why do you choose an ETF? Why do you choose any specific investment? But let's talk about what happened last week, what we're looking for next week in terms of economics, earnings, and markets. And again, we did see that the global markets fell. There was some concern about earnings throughout the week. Oil prices were all over the place. They move into the jobs report on Friday, of course, always an important issue. And one of the things we did see leading up to the jobs report was that there were several central bankers that seemed to be relatively hawkish, which is interesting, as a lot of people are noticing that in between meetings, there's a lot of hawkish conversation that goes on. And then once the meeting comes, a Fed meeting, a minutes, or even a decision, a policy decision meeting, they're very dovish. Seems to be a constant cycle that goes on. Get them set up for something and then kind of don't do anything. But the ABLE jobs report, clearly one of the biggest issues that we've been looking at and waiting for to see what's going on with the job condition, because a lot of people look at the jobs numbers more so than they look at, let's say, GDP or manufacturing or retail sales or anything else. And we saw that employers hired about 160,000 more workers than they fired last month, and that the net job gain was, unfortunately, the smallest we've seen since, I think, back in September. So the big question is the job market petering out? Is the gains that we've been seeing that has been quite astonishing in the face of construction that has been slowing down and many of the layoffs of the oil sector and energy sector, as well as the questionable GDP numbers and a very, very slow-moving economy, kind of being an aberration? And the question is, are we at kind of full employment at this point? So the big issue, what we saw, the reaction to the news was an immediate sell-off, about 13 handles on the S&P prior to the market open. So when it came out at 8:30 on Friday, it was kind of initially a lackluster response. And then into the open, we saw this move down to about 13 points on the S&P 500, about 60 basis points or so. And then all of a sudden, there was a turn about midday where I think there was a obvious and very apparent thought that, well, because we're seeing now that employment may not be at the rapid pace of gains that we've seen, the Fed is going to kind of say, well, we're going to hold off for some time. Even though during the week, there was a comment by a couple different Fed members that June was going to be a quote unquote live meeting, which there could be a rate hike. Getting ready for that. Now, our hourly wages on an average basis improved to about 25.53 in April, up about 2.5% year over year. But the main jobless rate continued to stay at about 5%. We did see a unemployed and underemployed on the U6 count declined slightly to about 9.7%. The other thing that we saw last week was that both the services and the non-services index for manufacturing both were maintaining over the critical 50 level that indicates expansion throughout April. The ISM manufacturing came in at 50.8, slightly over the 50. Non-manufacturing came in at 55.7, and that was good. However, the manufacturing number fell a little bit short, while the service index was a little bit better than analysts had predicted. Oil was still under $45, closing in about $44.66 for the week, down about 2.7%. But we did see that there were some headlines that the head of Saudi Arabia's oil, so the oil minister for Saudi Arabia, was fired. Now, whether or not that was from some recent comments that were made about flooding the markets, or whether it was not because of just simply not being able to handle what's going on, and some new blood being put in order to hopefully lift the prices and stabilize prices of oil, is the big question. So there will be some confusion probably into the early part of next week till we understand this particular oil minister's outlook and his plan. Because right now, Saudi Arabia, clearly one of the leaders in the area of oil and of OPEC in general. We saw that the S&P lost about 0.5% for the week, the NASDAQ down about 0.8% for the week, Dow Jones down slightly to about 20 basis points for the week. So I think that the very concerning jobs report, only adding about 160,000, which, again, it was light. It was no question it was light. But still overall gaining some speed. So this week coming up, we have earnings on Monday from Hertz Global. We'll have to watch that to see how the car company is holding up in the face of competition from, things like Uber. We also have Novatel Wireless, Tyson Foods, And then on Tuesday, Dean Foods, Norwegian Cruise Lines, Planet Fitness, Walt Disney Company. Wednesday earnings from, let's see, we got Jack in the Box, Macy's. That would be really interesting to watch what's going on with Macy's. NetEase, Weibo, which are Chinese internet-based companies. And Wendy's. On Thursday, we're going to see the latest initial claims figures. And we're also going to see reports from many of the retailers like Dillard's, Kohl's, Nordstrom's, Ralph Lauren. We're going to see Shake Shack, you know, one of my quote-unquote favorites, and Symantec. And then we're going to be seeing also April retail sales data, April producer price indexes, and initial May consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan on Friday, and also reports from JCPenney, who last week, well, we saw that JCPenney last week announced they have some more problems that are really brewing there, and that turnaround story that has been ongoing recently, maybe not turning around as fast as can be. And there was a lot of concern with the report. Stock was down about 7%. We also saw many of the drug companies last week get really hit pretty hard on the news from Endo Pharmaceuticals. And Endo is, they have a lot of painkillers and generics and a variety of other things. And this company, which was their balance sheet was clean, their earnings were consistent. Everything about the company that I've seen in the past, before the recent change of dynamic for many of these, for these drug companies with the Senate looking into them and Congress being, you know, kind of all up in arms about the pricing practices of these companies, and obviously what went on with Valeant, and then the flow through to many of the companies on what went on with Valeant, and then the discovery that many of these companies are also doing the same thing in terms of pricing of their drugs, buying other companies, rolling them up, and jacking prices, and even jacking prices of many of the drugs in their portfolio that they had previously. This company came out with earnings and a disappointing outlook, dropped the stock like more than 30%. Now, this stock was up like, I don't know, close to 100-something, or right at the 100 level, and this is down about 80% from its high. So once a great company, and now it's looking pretty lousy. I mean, overall, this company really has taken it on the chin, and this last move by in reaction to their earnings report really hit a lot of other companies, including Valeant and other companies that are in the same kind of drug distribution business, who have been in the practice of buying and raising, or just raising, or just even distributing. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know what's going on with this. I was pretty surprised to see this company take such an absolute beating on these on the report. It wasn't good. That's the bottom line. GoPro disappointed again. That stock was down. Fitbit get absolutely obliterated last week on the fact that they are just not at all keeping pace with their growth rates. So we've been seeing that there has been a tremendous amount of fall off. Tesla, you can kind of go both ways on Tesla, what you think about that. Stock was up, then it was down. Right now, there's still a big question mark in terms of what's going on, but their earnings were out last week, and not much of excitement there. Apple's on key support right now. We'll have to see how that plays out, but a lot of disappointment after their recent earnings as well. So there's going to be some interesting things. Our earnings season is wrapping up, and we're going to see in the next couple of weeks what the overall earnings have been and calculate to be for the S&P 500. Give us an idea of what we could really calculate as the forward PE and PE that should be appropriate for the S&P, and then maybe make some calculations on what the 1 year price should be, or at least even the next quarter, possibly where players are going to be playing in terms of their overall. So that's about it in terms of what's going on. But I thought we'd spend some time with Kevin Hoffman and see what we could do about our portfolios. How about it? You know, and a long time ago, we mentioned that we were going to talk about some of the ways we manage money here at Horowitz & Company, some of the things that we do in terms of not our trading strategies, not the algorithmic strategy like Aero, but some of the core strategies we do for clients. And I thought it would be great to bring back somebody who we've had on many times before, but hasn't been on for a while. Not that we don't like him, but that he just, you know, he's been busy. Kevin Hoffman works with me here, and we've been working together for years and years and years. And I thought we would spend some time discussing some of the big picture investing, the things that we do as core portfolio styles for clients, and then also talk about some of the things that we're working on, but also bring you some information about how you can actually better your investing in the core strategies, not just the stock picking, not just the sector picking and trying to maybe scalp trade and day trade and swing trade, but something a little bit more for your 401ks, your long-term portfolio monies, your outlook for retirement, things of that nature. So Kevin, we have a lot to talk about, don't we?
We sure do.
Yep. So I thought we would start with I thought we'd go broad scope, broad brush initially, and talk about the whole idea of asset allocation. You know, in a time when you see stocks moving up or down, 15, 20% in a day here and there, and, you know, it's always very exciting to say, oh, I want to buy that. I want to find that next stock that's going to move up 200% over the next year, that biotech, whatever. But really, it's kind of a difficult task. So I thought that we would stay with the idea of asset allocation. I thought you would maybe bring to us a little bit about what it's all about, explain it a little bit, and then we can go into some details.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think as about picking stocks almost like gambling a little bit, you know, because there's always those stocks out there that run up and down quite a bit, whether it be Tesla or Google or whatever else is out there. But it can be very difficult to pick winners and to be also sure about what you're buying. Whereas if you utilize an asset allocation, more times than not, you can be right rather than being wrong and sticking into the long-term game. There's a lot greater risk with individual companies. And as we know, just like you said, stocks can move up and down, you know, 10 or 20% either in a day or a week or whatever it might be. And sometimes those losses are quite difficult to stomach.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because there's a difference, I think, you know, kind of just quickly bridging over to like our various strategies that we have. And, you know, we don't go after one stock and have five stocks in the portfolio and look for, you know, a major home run per se. You know, we have a basket, for example. And so we're applying the whole idea of diversification there. But there is greater risk when you're saying, you know, I'm putting it all on black, I'm putting it all on red. You know, I'm shoving it all in poker, all in, whatever it may be, or, you know, really having a very undiversified or not even undiversified. I think it is, all things in one area. And what I mean by that is there's an issue of diversification. There's an issue of having a portfolio that is tightly aligned with maybe a particular sector, whether it's technology, for example. Well, that's not just maybe one stock. That's a whole bunch of things. But, you know, I guess the question a lot of people ask is, you know, why do I care about volatility? Why do I care about this? You know, if I buy this index today and it's at $10 and in 10 years it's at $20, let's say, right? I kind of slept through all of it. I did the Sleeping Beauty type of thing. I didn't look at it. I doubled my money. Whereas, if I'm diversified and I have an asset allocation that maybe gets me the same place but a lot smoother, is there any difference?
Well, there can be a big difference. And, you know, I prefer to play the long game and, you know, kind of take small wins throughout time and limit losses. And that's basically just to kind of keep the emotions in check. And, you know, what a lot of people do is they get very emotional about their money. And, you know, if you're that kind of person that can buy into a strategy and, you know, pass out for the next 30 years and then wake up and you're good, then yeah, that's great. But if you're a person that takes a look at their monthly statement or even a quarterly statement or even a yearly statement and they see that they're down, you know, on a $100,000 portfolio, maybe they're down $10,000 or $15,000. You know, that's something that can be tough for everybody to stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would agree with that. I mean, it's interesting that that a lot of people, I think, also have the idea that, yeah, I can be aggressive. You know, I can handle the risk. I can handle the volatility. But when push comes to shove, what happens is that if they set themselves up in a situation where they are expecting to have the ability to stomach the volatility, and then when the time comes, you know, back to that story, you have 10 years of period, you get from one thing, gets to the same place as the other. But did you really get to the same place, or were you spooked out along the way?
Right. Yeah, and there's been multiple studies done that show that you know, investors generally only get you know, somewhere between 50 to 70% of whatever the market brings. And that's because they, you know, kind of get spooked out as markets come down and don't get back in until later on and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if you have a plan and you're, you know, fully diversified and you have a good asset allocation, then, you know, you can really reduce the amount of risk that you take on while, you know, making those small wins throughout time. And, you know, that's a lot of what the efficient frontier is about, is, you know, getting a mix of non-correlated asset classes in order to provide support when those maybe higher risk or higher volatility asset classes move down in value. And then, you know, as they come back up and you rebalance back into the portfolio, then, you know, you kind of gain that return. It's essentially just buying low and selling high. And it's having that strategic plan in order to do so.
Now, in terms of the efficient frontier, you mentioned that. So this is a kind of a word that has been was created and crafted and used a lot back in the, we'll say, the 80s, maybe even into the 90s. It was part of this whole modern portfolio theory process that was really used in a pretty interesting way. There was a lot of misrepresentation, in my opinion, of that, where they talked about how, you know, they kind of threw all these mountain charts in front of you as a client, and they would say, the advisor would say, well, you know, 90% of the portfolio returns are based on the asset allocation. And it was just a little, just a slight bit twist on the reality of what was really being promoted by the statisticians and the analysts who were creating this to try to convince people to do this. Not that it was bad, but it just was not properly presented, and at least from what I can see. But this efficient frontier, what's the whole point here? I know that diversification on one hand can actually bring down returns, right? In theory, you're not going to go for the gusto and the long shot and kind of put all your money in one. But at the same time, it does actually limit risk somehow, right?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of the efficient frontier is to find that mix of assets that produces the greatest amount of return with the least amount of risk. And, you know, in the simplest form, you know, you're looking at, let's call it 100% bonds or 100% stocks or a mix of the two. So if you're 100% stocks, that's essentially the most risk with the least amount of, or the most reward, but also the most amount of risk. Whereas if you're in bonds, 100%, you also have the least amount of risk, but also the least amount of reward. So somewhere in the middle, whether it be 40-60, 50-50, 70-30, there's different levels that can create a better risk-reward profile in that when bonds tend to come down in price, maybe the stocks move up in price. And when stocks come down, the bonds protect you. Yeah. So that's the whole point of having a good mix within the asset allocation. Now, some problems can arise when you're looking at major asset classes that go out of favor for a long period of time. And, you know, we've seen that happen actually presently with commodities and, right, and them being an issue that, you know, they are generally a good asset class to have for both diversification, inflation protection, and that kind of stuff. But for the past 5-6 years, we've seen nothing but negative returns due to the fact that, you know, economies aren't growing, inflation isn't there, despite the fact that, you know, the government continues to pump money in. And, you know, we've seen this happen throughout time with real estate and through, you know, 06 to 2010 or bonds in the 80s, you know, growth versus value in the 90s and early 2000s. And even a sector type thing with tech in the, you know, early 2000s, where you saw this huge boom and big bust.
Right. By the way, if anybody heard that noise going overhead, I think, you know, we're in Fort Lauderdale and we're recording this in a studio, but at the same time, it seems that I guess we have the Blue Angels practicing or going up. Did you hear that, Kevin?
Yeah, that was a pretty loud boom.
Yeah, the Blue Angels are obviously flying over. I'm kind of trying to peek out this little area I could see outside to see where they are, but some F-14 or 15 or something's going overhead. Pretty wild. That's the it's the air show. It was the Air and Sea show. Now it's just the air show in Fort Lauderdale. So that's happening right now as we actually record this. So, okay, so let's talk a little bit about, we know the whole idea about diversification and what it's about in terms of the potential benefit of risk reduction long-term, you know, looking at that. One of the things that I like to look at in terms of diversification and asset allocation, I wrote about this to try to create some type of a vision, is the whole idea of a flower garden, using that metaphor to describe what a portfolio can look like. And what I talk about is this whole idea that you can have a flower garden that is full of like beautiful roses, or maybe a flower garden that's full of beautiful impatiens. And, you know, if you have impatiens and you've had the opportunity to grow these in your garden, they're gorgeous when they bloom. When they die, when the heat gets too much, and what happens is, you know, or depending on where you live and what the cycle is for impatiens, there are different things, different time periods for different areas around the country. But basically what happens is when they die, they're just stems and ugly and there's nothing left. You have to, just a mound of dirt left. Now, wouldn't it be nice if your flower garden was designed a little bit differently, where you had the ability to have some impatiens in there, roses, heliconia, you have evergreens like money markets and bond funds, so that something is actually blooming at any given time during the year. This way that you have a flower garden that is constantly looking like it's alive, it's beautiful, and you do a little planting. Maybe when the impatiens come out, you put something else in, you plant your bulbs depending on where you live, and you have these beautiful tulips coming up and all that. And this is what the whole idea is behind a diversified portfolio, where you get something that's blooming at any given time. Yes, some things may not look good. Some things may be dying off for a little while, but then they come back, which is like a reversionary trade, or where it's a mean reversion trade, or at least a time when it's back in favor, because you will see that ebb and flow of dollars in and out of various sectors, whether it's bonds, commodities, real estate, stocks, in and out over various economic cycles. And if you have that flower garden approach to your portfolio, what's nice about it is that you're not going to have to worry about it looking just barren and disgusting for a period of time where you're just panicked and you have no idea what to do. And you just say, you know what? I'm going to give up on gardening. I'm just giving up. So you don't have that situation. You can kind of keep it pruned and very, very nicely growing over time. So kind of just a quick visual there to give you something to think about when we talk about the idea of diversification. And this is the core, may seem rather broad-based yet simplistic at the same time, but it is the core of what we are looking for in terms of setting up our institutional client portfolios or our client retirement portfolios, where we have a large amount of assets that they don't want to have a lot of risk for, but they want to have long-term rewards. And we call that the global allocation strategy, which, by the way, if you're interested in this, just to let you know, we'll put that on the website under this show episode at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, where you can grab some information, just a very general look at some of the things that we're talking about. You can download a quick little report that we put together on the whole idea of global allocations and diversification. So a little 10-second commercial there on that. But one of the things you use, I mean, one of the things you can do, there's different ways of skinning the cat, right? So you could use stocks and maybe build a portfolio and diversified portfolio based on individual equities, of course. Mm-hmm. You could do it on individual stocks and things like that. But there are other ways to skin this cat. One of the ways that we like to do it is a low-cost feature, right? A low-cost process through funds and ETFs. But why is that good?
Well, first off, I want to say that that analogy about the flower garden is probably the best I've heard as far as the reasons for asset allocation diversification. But with regards to mutual funds and ETFs, I think these are some of the best tools that we can utilize in order to get that diversification. Mm-hmm. First off, if you're going to try and put together a portfolio of multiple stocks, you're going to run out of money paying commissions on buying each of these stocks. Mm-hmm. And whereas in a mutual fund, you can get exposure to, you know, hundreds or even thousands of stocks with just 3, 4, 5, 6 funds. So I think it's a great way both to look at actively managed funds and passively managed funds. And we see that in both mutual funds and ETFs, where we have both active and passive management. But the other great thing about these two things is that, you know, you get a professional manager behind this. You know, guys that have been to school, have PhDs, and you know, do this, you know, every day, 24/7 kind of a thing. Versus, you know, just the layman who's, you know, going to work, blue collar, white collar, whatever it might be, you know, you may not have
taking a few minutes to say, what's on CNBC? What am I going to buy here? But I need to back you up and stop you for a second, because there's a terminology that you're using that I'm not sure everybody understands. And that is passive and active. Kind of just walk us through the difference.
Yeah, so passive management, that can be looked at like an ETF, like the SPY. Basically, what passive management is that, you know, they're not moving in and out of individual positions based off of whether it be fundamentals or technicals or anything like that. They're just simply following what the index might produce, whether it be the Russell 1000, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Dow, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Whereas active management allows the professional manager to pick and choose different stocks and allocate more or less to a particular sector in order to, in essence, produce better returns over time.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, you get a knock on the active managers when passive. You know, there's a bit of a crew, if you will be, let's say, passive only, right? You know, and there's some mutual fund or ETFs, even some mutual funds that are just, oh, you know, active management never wins, and you have to be passive and all this good stuff. And then you got the active guys who are like, oh, you know, passive. That's great, but what happens when you get into a situation where all of a sudden things don't do really well and you want to be actively involved and maybe moving from one sector to the other or maybe taking money out of the market, putting more in. So you can't do that with passive management. Not that either one of those is wrong. What's wrong is that either one of those fighting each other about which one is wrong. There's time and place for each one of these circumstances. And if you think about it for a second, for example, an ETF that when you're trying to replicate the S&P 500, why would you go out and buy a mutual fund that maybe is a retail-based mutual fund that has a 1 to 1.5% management fee, maybe some kind of a load or some kind of other cost factor to buy it? And then internally, what's happening is you have to have at least the S&P 500 plus 1% or 1.25%, let's say, to beat or to meet the actual return of that, meaning that the allocation has to be much more aggressive and off of the actual S&P 500. So you get something called style drift, which maybe we'll talk about in a moment. But the thing is that what's really interesting is there are places and a time for each one of these, right? So you have, for example, if you're going to be S&P 500, it's a very efficient market, a very liquid market, it's a very regulated market, it's very much a market that has plenty of volume. It's a good, so you know what? Buy an ETF. However, if you want to have some investments in emerging market bonds, less liquid, there are multiple countries involved, multiple languages, multiple politics, multiple currencies. There are all sorts of things that are happening. It would probably be better suited to have a team that knows the language, knows the politics, understands the areas and what's happening, maybe has a lot more information that can move you in and out of appropriate countries and bonds of different statuses overall. And I think that's a very big distinction between the two. And at the same time, when you build a portfolio, what we do at least when we build a portfolio is look for where are the efficiencies that we can gain from not only the benefits of outward and future performance, but also where the efficiency that we can gain in cost savings for clients, right? I mean, that's an important factor.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of inefficiencies in, you know, some of the smaller, less liquid markets, but not a whole lot of inefficiencies in, you know, large cap stocks, which may be easier to replicate with an ETF, and they cost a lot less money.
Yeah,
you know, your expense ratio on most passively managed ETFs are somewhere between, you know, 10 and 20 basis points, whereas an actively managed fund might cost you a percent or 1.2% over the year. So, you know,
but that doesn't mean be afraid of the fees, right? There are some reasons to pay up for certain things.
Well, yeah, of course, especially when it comes to maybe emerging markets or international stocks or, like you said, emerging market bonds, because, you know, having the ability to first off be able to buy those at your brokerage house, an individual emerging market stock might be not feasible. And then on second hand, you know, you want somebody that's, you know, boots on the ground, that knows the area really well and can provide some much better insight. So
there goes another one of those guys. Wow.
Quite loud.
I think they just ripped the roof off this place. Pretty cool. Sorry for that, gang. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, we'll just keep it real, right? So, all right, let's kind of move over now to the whole idea of how do you actually find. No, you know what? I want to start with something first. Before we talk about how we can actually find a mutual fund or an ETF, I just want to mention something that, you know, cost factors, which we just talked about, are extremely important. And understanding things like 12b-1 fees or back-end loads or front-end loads or management fees or even management fee waivers, something that you have to watch very carefully because, like I said, you don't want something all of a sudden that you have invested in, all of a sudden wake up one day and realize, what is that I'm being charged and how is that, you know? So a little bit of transparency is important, just as a point of reference. But we'll talk a little bit about that and how to actually select some of these and what the point is. But okay, so here we are. We decide somehow that we want to look at mutual funds and ETFs as an investment option. We don't know what our asset allocation should be exactly right now, but we want to kind of start looking at what are the different types and styles and what managers are out there. And we say, okay, we know that the efficient markets, we want to have some ETFs, the inefficient markets, we're going to look for some mutual funds. So how do I even begin the process of narrowing down? Because there are thousands and thousands of mutual funds. I mean, seriously, a lot of them are smaller. A lot of them maybe don't trade a lot in terms of ETFs, et cetera. But how do I actually go about starting the process of finding any of these that may meet my criteria?
Yeah, first off, I would suggest everybody develop some sort of a screening or filtering process in order to narrow down some of the results. As many of us know, there are more mutual funds out there than I can even count, you know, tens of thousands of them, and both ETFs and mutual funds. So in order to narrow down what our choices might be, we first have to figure out, you know, what asset class are we trying to fill, and, you know, how much do we want to pay, and all those kind of good things. So there are various different screeners that you can utilize from, you know, possibly even your brokerage house that you use, or Yahoo or CNBC or Wall Street Journal. But really, I tend to think that for a retail investor, Morningstar is probably the one of the best places that someone can go in order to get most of the information that they might need. But when selecting a mutual fund, there's lots of different little things that we need to look at in order to find out what is the best mutual fund out there for me or for the particular asset class that I'm looking at. And some of those things might be, you know, how long has the manager been on board? Mm-hmm. You know, typically you want to see a longer term track record from that particular manager. You want to see him, you know, at least in there for, you know, 5-10 years plus. You want to see a longer fund inception date, and that's because you want to kind of see, you know, over time, how is this fund performing? And, you know, if the fund's only been around a year or two, it may be difficult to get a good gauge as to, you know, how this fund is going to perform in different, you know, different market environments. Whereas, you know, if you have funds that have been around for 10, 20 plus years, you know, that you can see that they've been through those cycles like 2008 or even 2000 or, you know, even further back. So, you know, having that longer tenure can help you get a better gauge on what the fund is going to do during different time periods.
Right, and then having the management with longer tenure tells you at least the person wasn't recently fired for some reason.
Right.
And also gives you the opportunity to understand how the manager is going to work. Doesn't tell you if they're going to be fired anytime soon, by the way.
That's true.
But it gives you a little bit of a basis of, okay, this is how they manage during those different time periods. And there's a lot of this, when you and I look through these funds and we look at the different characteristics, a lot of this all boils down to, I think, consistency.
Right.
Right. Exactly. You know, consistency of return, consistency of management, consistency of fees, consistency of risk. You know, that word can probably be used as a modifier in front of almost all the different characteristics that we're looking for.
Because, that's very true. Yeah.
And the reason for that is the opposite would be like erratic. The word erratic. We don't want to see, you know, okay, the guy had, wow, he had a 200% rate of return over 10 years in total return. But he had 1 year of up 100%, 1 year down 60%, 1 year up 130%. I mean, that's just all over the place.
Yeah. You know? And in investing, I'm not sure if you really want exciting, you know,
in this kind of investing.
Exactly. Right. In investing, I like to, you know, look for the boring stuff. And sometimes boring isn't fun. And I get that. But, you know, when I'm investing, I don't want to be, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down. You know, I want that smooth return over time so that I don't have to panic, you know?
Yeah. Well, and by the way, this is a far cry from what we usually talk about on the show, because again, this is just a different segment. We have various different strategies that we do, but also, you know, from the various day-to-day market, the news, the items we talk about on DH Unplugged, and how we talk about, you know, the things that are moving markets, the things that will move, and the stock picks we do there, the things we do inside of our algorithmic trading, TDIMG, where we have we're really just talking about a different sector of the process. So don't confuse it like, wait a minute, I thought they talk about that over here and they talk about, why are they talking about that here? It's just a different process. And you know what? It's like anything else. You know, you can segregate the different reasons for doing so dependent on client needs. And again, you know, this fits into the whole aspect of what type of investor are you? What do you want to do for yourself long term? And how do you want to be able to relate to your portfolio? Do you want to be checking all the time? Do you want to be having something that long term can, I don't want to say set it and forget it, but that's from you know, the concept. of you know, kind of just leaving everything as is and just, you know, hope for the best in the future. That's not what we're saying either. But the bottom line is there's a different way to skin the cat in different methodologies, and it's all different for different people. So, you know, you have to find what is the most appropriate for you in order to make a decision on how you're going to provide for your allocation or have somebody else do it for you, but at least be comfortable with it. Let's talk about the idea of tax efficiency. That's important. Turnover ratios. What is that all about?
Yeah, so when you're selecting a fund, you know, depending on what your tax situation might be, it might be less advantageous to have a fund that has greater turnover. And that's because that mutual fund will then spit out capital gains or dividends or any of that kind of stuff, which when it comes to April, when you do your tax return, you'll notice that you have, you know, larger gains.
Yeah, and you didn't sell anything, by the way.
You know, that's right. No, you never sold anything.
Minute. Why do I have $40,000 of gains and I made $30,000 on my portfolio total last year, but I have $40,000 of gains. Where's that? And I have to pay tax on it. Well, those kind of situations are when you have an inefficient fund or an inefficient investment that's putting through capital gains. A lot of that has to do with turnover. When the portfolio manager is rotating the portfolio significantly, mind you, in the case where you're getting a lot of gain pass-throughs, it's because they made money. But you don't know if that money that they made, by the way, is from an investment 5 years ago and you just got in 6 months ago.
That's right.
Yep. that's a stinger.
Yep, certainly can be. So you want to make sure you look for those funds that have lower turnover and greater tax efficiency. If that's an issue that you need to take care of, you know, if you're in the higher income tax brackets or something like that, you may want to look for more tax efficient funds. Now, if you're in a lower tax bracket, then it may not matter as much because right. You know your income tax rate is, you know, maybe 10% or 15% or fairly low. So that's why it's important to consider taxes when you're considering an investment.
And we already talked about share classes. I mean, one of the things we do for our clients, and this is not always available for everybody, and a lot of times it's not available to the retail investor, is to utilize the lowest cost shares possible. Now, you can get ETFs. That's easy, and that's why a lot of people have used them. Again, we only like them for the more efficient markets, which there's a lot of those. But at the same time, there's something called A, B, C. There's a Y class. There's all these different classes of funds. There's no load. There's no load, but a transaction fee. There's no load, no transaction fee. And then there's something that we use a lot, which is called institutional funds. But that's usually where there's, what, about $1 million minimum per purchase or initial purchase. The good news for our clients is that we can get those for them, even if they have a much smaller account, because we block up all of our clients. And, you know, we can easily get to those levels. But the point is that, you know, you want to make sure that you find those that have the lowest cost and don't get talked into anything. Front load funds are not great. Back end loads, we don't like those. C class shares, we really don't like those. Even the Y. Now, there is sometimes there's rationale. Don't be cheap here. Sometimes you have no load funds that are no cost at Schwab, Fidelity, TD, wherever else you trade. And then there are no load funds that have transaction fees. Now, what we have found many times is that the reason for that is that the no load funds without transaction fees, like on a Schwab One or Fidelity has theirs, TD, the internal fees are a little bit higher in those, and that eats away at your overall return long term. And the cost of maybe spending $25 to trade that one time is far less than the amount that you'll pay long term, even though you didn't want to, because you're like, I'm not paying a fee. I'm not going to pay anything for this. I can get the same thing at no load, a similar fund with no transaction fee. What ends up happening is that you're actually paying more over the long haul for the one that you didn't have to pay the transaction fee. So be careful about that. Don't be cheap and don't be too frugal. Be smart about which one you're going to look at. There's also an issue I know that we look at a lot is what's the diversification inside the diversification. What's the concentration of assets, let's say in the top 10 or 20% of the portfolio? And how does that, you know, why do we go through why that's important?
Yeah. So this is one of the biggest things that we kind of look at when we're selecting mutual funds is both how they got the performance that they did and how consistent they are going to be. Now, when you look at concentration, that can that can increase or decrease the volatility and the risk reward profile within that particular fund. And that's mostly because if you have a smaller amount of stocks, let's say you only have 10 stocks in a mutual fund, if one goes up or down 10 or 20%, you're going to have a much bigger impact on the portfolio versus maybe another fund that has less concentration and has 100 or 200 stocks in it. If a stock goes up 10 or 20% or down 10 or 20%, you're not going to see as much of an impact. So concentration, or a lot of times this is referred to as assets in the top 10% of a portfolio, will give you a good idea of how the fund might perform and how much volatility there might be in that fund.
Risk, yeah. So let's kind of skip over here because we're kind of running a little bit out of time. And I want to talk about, okay, so now we talk about the whole idea of diversification, the whole idea of a flower garden, the idea of, you know, getting to one place maybe at the same rate as another that has less volatility, the whole purpose of diversification, the whole purpose of why asset allocation works and mean reversion, all the stuff we talk about here. Okay, now here's the big question. So now we know the mutual funds that maybe fit certain categories that we want to have, maybe ETFs, et cetera. How do I, in the world, set up an asset allocation for myself? Because that kind of really trumps all of this. If I put it all in the SPY, I just defeated the whole purpose of diversification, right?
That's correct.
So, so what do I do?
Well, there's multiple ways and multiple schools of thought on this. And, you know, a lot of it, you know, those being people that prefer style box, asset class investing, fundamental investing, whether it be sector-based investing, you know, whereas I think it's good to have a mix of you know, of all of the above. But you also want to make sure that, you know, you're looking at you know, the major asset classes, whether it be large cap, mid cap, small cap, U.S. stocks, emerging markets, you know, and there's multiple levels of different types of bonds that are out there, whether it be high yield, investment grade, floating rate. So, you know, you really kind of have to take a look at how these assets have performed over time and how they fit your particular risk-reward profile, because some of these asset classes are much riskier and much more volatile than other asset classes. You know, if you're looking at just as simple as, you know, large caps versus small caps, generally large caps over time have been much less volatile, and small caps have been a lot more volatile, but right, you know, tend to produce greater returns during those good periods. So, you know, you really want to kind of take a look at those various different asset classes and see, you know, which ones are best for my particular risk reward profile.
Right. And then the big thing here is also when we talk about efficient frontier earlier, the whole idea is by developing an asset allocation. And this may not be able to be done just kind of on the piece of paper and look, you know, there's a little bit more that goes into the calculation of this that looks at historical performance of various asset categories and sectors when you mix them with others. Like, for example, if you put commodities in the portfolio, while there may be a problem recently with commodities, long term, it's actually brought down the overall risk and boosted returns. So you have to look at this in a way that is a bit more calculated. It's not always that easy to do so, but the bottom line is to mix up these assets in a way that brings you the most efficient portfolio risk adjusted. So it's kind of, again, this is, I can't give you exactly how to do this on the show because it's impossible. That's what we do and that we spend all our time doing, is looking at all the different variations and ways of developing a portfolio to actually make it, you know, the right, just the right look. It's kind of like getting dressed. You know, you kind of lay out the shirt, the jacket, the shoes, the pants, the socks, everything, all that, and the tie, and or your dress, whatever it is. I mean, you could lay out different colors, different things, and it kind of put it together right to make it look like a good you know, overall look for you.
That's right, and I think that's one of the problems that we have with a lot of the different robo investing type platforms.
Right.
The fact that, you know, they ask you 4, 5, maybe even 10 questions, and all of a sudden you have this asset allocation that spits out that you know, really doesn't take into consideration a lot of other things that you know, may be pertinent to your particular investment strategy, like taxes, or like your, you know, your time horizon, or your overall risk tolerance, or, you know, various other things that you know, you have going on in your life that you know, these robos don't take into consideration.
Well, but the interesting thing with robos, just to get back to my clothing analogy there, what ends up happening is you answer these questions and it's like a three sizes fits all.
Right.
That's what happens. You know, it's like, okay, answer all these questions. By the way, just to let you know, we only have three potential different sizes. So if you fit outside or in between any of those, too darn bad. Whereas, you know, that's okay. The whole idea of this quote unquote rope, as a matter of fact, maybe I'll let the cat out of the bag here a little bit. So we're in the process of developing a different yet similar. The whole concept of robo-investing, quote unquote, automatic rebalancing and utilizing efficient models is interesting from a technology standpoint. We like that. I think it's awesome. However, when it's only a certain selection of potential portfolio allocations, where it's only a few ETFs, maybe because they don't have the ability to bring any of the other types of active mutual funds in it, it kind of breaks the whole idea of diversification. So all it ends up doing is just being a robotic process of depositing your money and rebalancing it, which is not the way that I think that people really should be doing things. It doesn't make any sense. So we're in the process of building the next generation where you can actually have active and passive ETFs and mutual funds, by the way, institutional based and otherwise. And on top of that, it has a much better fit. So you're going to be able to have that size 2.5, that size 5.5. It will have the ability to have many of the great features of the quote unquote robo with advisor overlay on there, and actually kind of like a tailoring. That's what we'll look. I'm going to keep on going with this analogy. It's like a tailored fit to you, not just off the rack. That's the difference. Does that make sense? Right.
Yep, and more efficient too, and lower cost potentially.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, what you get is you get a much greater breadth of selection, greater opportunity to have it fit you much better in terms of the end product because of risk and risk analysis view of it, as well as an overlay of not just simply rebalancing, but also looking for what's happening and doing this whole process of where is the best investment, and then putting it into the technology side of things, and the output of that is going to be much better. So anyway, it's not built yet, so I don't want anybody going, well, I want to get this, because like a lot of times we get calls on this kind of stuff. But what we'll do is I'll put a quick request form on the show notes for this episode on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, episode number, 462. And you could just put your name in there, maybe your email. We'll put you in a list and hold it aside until when this is ready. We'll give you the opportunity to check it out and see what it's all about, so you can find out more about it. So just go over to the show notes, to the website, disciplinedinvestor.com. You'll see the information. There'll be a little form on there to get a few different things, so you can make sure to be one of the first to find out more about this when we have this all built out. But it's definitely going to be something, I think, that's going to be really neat, where it's going to be all the aspects of what everybody likes about the robo, plus a much greater degree of efficiency, tailoring, as well as a much
better
greater
investment option.
Yeah, no, much better. Because we're going to be able to get the institutional class for clients, right, where you can't get that, just ETFs and 10 ETFs, which is not going to do the trick on that. So we'll do that. And then also, you know, looking at the fund, you know, a lot of times we meet with the fund managers and the fund management team, or have conference calls with them, you know, to understand what's happening, understand where they're going with it, you know, get a lot of insight. So anyway, we're going to wrap it up right there because we're running out of time on that. But we did cover, I think we covered a lot, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So again, talking about asset allocation, talking about the whole idea of ETFs and mutual funds, and discussing the whole idea of where it's better. Use this information, look at your portfolio, take a look at actually what you're doing. Take a look at what you've done in the past. Take a look at what you like about what you've done, what you didn't like. You know, a lot of times advisors, you know, you go to Morgan Stanley or whoever the name is out there that you're using, and they'll put you in something and they never take you out. You know, one of the reasons is they get paid on transactions. You know, that's not a good way to do things either. A transaction-based model for portfolio management or for investment advice. You know, look at what you're doing to understand, and take a moment, maybe just take a couple of days next week. Look at what you're actually doing, how you've gotten to this. Because a lot of times we get portfolio. Kevin, how many times do we get portfolios here? A client sent, you know, potential people that want us to review their information. They send it over to us, and I ask the question, why is your portfolio structured this way?
Right.
And what do they say?
I don't know. Right. It's the way it's been.
It's the way it's been. I bought this in 1982. I bought that in 1994. I have this mutual fund. I don't know what it does exactly. It says that it does this or that, and I think it's doing well. And I said, then the follow-up question is, okay, Why is it diversified? What is the plan? And what do they say?
Don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to make sure that you understand it, for whether you do it yourself, whether you bring somebody else in to do it, it doesn't matter. The point is, educationally and for in, you know, for your future, I want to, we want to make sure that you have all the tools that you need. And that's what the whole point of the show is, by the way, you know, bringing on our guests that we have on, et cetera. But I think this issue, there's more people out there that have core portfolios, whether it's their 401k, whether it's the core portfolio they have at their brokerage. A lot of times, right, you could confirm this. A lot of times people bring up their portfolios to us and they're like, okay, I see that you have all these mutual funds, you have these ETFs and all that, and you have all these stocks. What's going on? Well, the advisor handles like the mutual fund things and that, and I kind of pick some stocks here and there, right? And then right. And then you have this blob of a portfolio with no design, direction, no rhyme or reason, nothing, right? I mean,
right, yep.
So anyway, the point is that I think it's time to consider how you're doing, what you're doing. You know, we know markets have been a little bit volatile right now. Whether they go up from here, whether they go down from here is really not the whole point of what it is that we're really talking about today. We're talking about the long-term process of developing a solid plan with actionable ideas and with a long-term process in order to make sure you stay the course. That's yep. The whole point here.
Yeah, and it's making sure that you don't sell out when emotions run high, or you know, get too excited when markets are very vibrant.
Right, and by the way, that doesn't mean staying in at all costs.
That's
that,
right.
That doesn't mean that putting in just to put it in. That doesn't mean that, oh my God, it's low, so it's low, I'm going to buy it, or because it's high, I'm going to sell it. That doesn't mean, it means just making sure that you stay the appropriate course of the process, which, by the way, changes over time. But this way, you know, you at least have a plan. It's, you know what? If you get in your car and you decide you're going to drive somewhere that you've never been before, how far are you going to get to, how far is it going to be till you realize, you know, maybe I should have planned this on a map, or maybe Siri or my GPS, versus just aimlessly traveling out there,
right?
Trying to get somewhere, you know. And it's like, have I arrived? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. I'm not sure if I arrived because I have no idea. Or if you're actually 20 miles from your destination and you really don't know the address, but you know the general vicinity, how are you going to get there? The whole point is you need a map. You need something that can keep you in the process and keep you straight with what you're doing in the future. Anyway. This is Andrew Horowitz. I thank you for joining me today and every single week on The Disciplined Investor. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. And I encourage you to do so, because John C. Dvorak laughed at me when we only had like 7,500 followers, which is pretty good, but he's got like 100,000. So we're trying to pick it up. So make sure to follow me on Twitter. You'll get first dibs on the podcast when they come out. And of course, you can listen to DH Unplugged each and every week, play the games that we play, where we have competitions with our listeners on picking some stocks and all that. On Tuesday evenings, it comes out, and of course, it's available throughout the week. So you can listen to that on dhunplugged.com. And finally, just re-mention the point that if you want information on the global allocation strategy, or you want to be on the list to find out more about the strategy that we have not picked a name for, that is an efficient robo-esque type of strategy, which maybe we'll just call maybe we'll just call it that. Go over to The Disciplined Investor as well, episode number 462, and check out the form that's on there, a little fill-in. Just ask your name, address, or not your name, address, your email address, and we'll make sure to put you on the list. When it happens, we'll send it right out to you. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.